When you think of wine, you may think of France, the world's top exporter of wine, or you may think of California, by far the top producer of wine in the U.S. Compared to them, Illinois has a lot of catching up to do in the wine business. But Illinois wine has definitely been on the rebound in the past decade, with 450 vineyards and more than 100 wineries now listed by the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association. I'm Jim Meadows, and today on Focus, we'll meet a couple of Central Illinois winemakers. Tony Jacobson of Sleepy Creek Vineyards in Vermilion County will tell how he got into the wine business, and we'll talk with Bradley Beam, a winemaker at Willits Winery and Cellar in Manitou, and also an enologist, essentially a wine scientist, with the Illinois Grape Growers Association. Learn about Illinois wine, its qualities, and why it's a growing business on Focus. Coming up after this hour's news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and about 10 years or so ago, I produced a feature story for WYLL News on the Illinois wine industry and the state's efforts to encourage wine production. I remember buying a bottle of wine from a downstate Illinois winery and serving it at some family gathering and seeing my brother-in-law express surprise that the wine was actually pretty good. Well, that praise may have been due to low expectations, but expectations for the Illinois wine industry have certainly been on the rise since then. And my two guests today are both involved with Illinois wine. In the studio with me is Tony Jacobson. He is a winemaker at Sleepy Creek Vineyards. They're halfway between Oakwood and Fairmont in Vermilion County. Tony, welcome to Focus.
Thank you so much, Jim.
And I've got another winemaker on the phone, Bradley Beam. Makes wine for Willits Winery and Cellar in Manitou. That's about 25 miles down the Illinois River from Peoria. They don't grow grapes, but they do make wine. But Brad has another job as, help me here, Brad, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, enologist for the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association?
That is correct.
Brad, welcome to Focus.
Thank you.
And let me get down to the, to that word. As an enologist, what do you do for the Grape Growers and Vintners Association?
Well, Jim, I do a lot of things, but I'm generally a kind of an extension specialist, a source of information. My real goal is to help shorten the learning curve for a lot of our new wineries and help those wineries that are more established increase the quality of their products.
Okay, and Tony, since you're growing grapes in Central Illinois, I'm wondering about the learning curve. I mean, did you come in already knowing about winemaking and grape growing for wine?
I actually came in as a new face. I started working for Sleepy Creek Vineyards about 2 years ago. I got a degree in graphic design, and just happenstance and good luck actually landed me a job as a winemaker at Sleepy Creek.
From graphic design to winemaker.
Yeah.
You didn't design like the label for the bottles, did you?
Actually, some of those are ongoing projects at work right now. So.
Well, we welcome your questions about Illinois wine on the program today. You can call us at 333-9455 or toll free at 1-800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address, will-talk. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. And we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter at Focus580. And Tony, I'm wondering, grapes are grown for wine around the world. What are the particular challenges for growing them in Illinois?
There are a host of challenges here, and Brad can back me up on a lot of these. So a lot of the challenges that we have are we have cold winters. That's our biggest one. So a lot of the grapes that people are familiar with, like Cabernet, Merlot, and even Chardonnay, they can be grown in maybe southern Illinois, but they take a lot of effort. So there's a new kind of wave of wines going in the Midwest called cold hardy French hybrid cultivars. And so those are kind of the grapes that will survive these cold winters, and they're actually making wonderful wines for people. We have a range of dry wines, sweet wines, and everything in between for people of any tastes.
So, and I'm wondering for you, Bradley, since you're looking at the whole state, is the full range of grapes for wine use being grown in Illinois, or does Illinois tend to specialize in a certain type?
Oh, my goodness. We have really four distinctly different growing regions around the state of Illinois, and So in the far southern part of Illinois, we're growing anything from traditional vinifera to, you know, like grapes like Chardonnay, Viognier, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and all the way up to northern Illinois where we're growing these extreme cold hardy hybrid cultivars. So as far as establishing a true singular state identity, that's kind of a challenge, you know, but I think one of our strengths is that diversity because we see growers actually transporting fruit during harvest time from, you know, north or from south to north and vice versa.
I'm wondering, just to take a larger look on the project, on the product, the wines used for grapes, how do they differ from, say, table grapes?
Well, table grapes have a real distinctive flavor and size. You know, wine grapes, grapes in general, first off, are one of those really remarkable fruits. You know, if we were to ferment strawberries, if we were to crush and press strawberries and get juice from strawberries and ferment them, it would smell and taste just like strawberries, okay? Grapes are not quite that same way. You know, if you actually take any grape variety, whether it's Chardonnay or whether it's Cabernet Sauvignon, and you actually just drink the juice from those grapes, it tastes pretty plain. You know, it's sweet, but it doesn't have a lot of distinctive flavor. Once you actually ferment that juice, it becomes something completely different. And so that's one of the remarkable things about these grapes is that their starting point and their ending point in the bottle are very, very different.
Well, I'm wondering then the fermentation process and the way that the wine that's produced from the fermentation process, does that depend on the quality of the grape or does that depend on the process?
Well, grapes make the wine ultimately. You know, if we don't have quality fruit going in, we don't have quality wine coming out. I tend to tell my new winemakers that it's a garbage in, garbage out scenario. You know, you can't make a silk purse from a sow's ear, so to speak. So really, it's all about the grape, and that's one of the emphasis of all of our extension efforts in Illinois, is to really improve the quality of the fruit coming into the winery.
Tony, I'm wondering, when you look at the crop at Sleepy Creek, can you, say, look at and taste a grape, and even though the final product will be quite different, can you get some idea of its suitability and what sort of wine it'll produce?
Absolutely. You can definitely tell product or the quality of the grape just by walking around the vineyard. That's actually one of the best ways.
Just
to
by
gauge.
Walking around and tasting or looking?
You can taste, you can look. It's kind of, that's one of my favorite parts about the job is that you use so many of your senses, or all of your senses, you know, taste, smell, visual, you know, sight and everything.
Maybe an example of what sort of sensory information you can get.
So a lot of times, like if you're just strolling around in the vineyard and you can take a look at the leaves and you can notice if there's a lot of discoloration, but then down to the grapes, you know, if there are little black spots on them, you can tell that there's not something perfect about them and maybe these are issues that can be addressed. Tasting, and I mean, there's a... We test the wines to make sure they're at the ripeness, or the grapes to make sure they're at the ripeness that we want before we pick them. But we taste them throughout the year to kind of gauge where the acidity is versus sugar. And it's kind of cool process. The grapes are little, I call them little acid bombs. As they grow, they're these hard little green berries, and birds will come through. And that's kind of like a little self-defense mechanism until their seed is mature enough to actually produce a new vine.
Okay, so they are not interesting, the birds, until the grapes want to be interesting.
Yeah, and then as soon as they start tasting or changing colors, that's when those sugars kind of start to come in and balance the acids out, and that's when things start getting really exciting.
Brad, I'm wondering, in your own work as a winemaker at Willits, I understand they are not a vineyard, so where are you getting your grapes from?
Actually, we are actually a vineyard, too.
Oh, you are a vineyard as well.
Yeah, we have about 7 acres of vineyard.
Okay, so you're working with grapes, and are you also working with other fruits as well?
Yeah, we make wines from, like most wineries in Illinois, frankly, we don't know who's going to walk through the door, which kind of customer is going to walk through the door, and what they're going to want. And so whereas if you were to go to Napa Valley, you have a pretty good expectation of what kind of wines they're going to serve you when you walk through the door. We've got a work a little harder, and so we'll often offer anywhere between 10 to 20 different wines, and so hopefully, our hope is that whoever walks through the door, we're going to find something on the shelf they like. So at Willits, we make 6 or 7 different fruit wines. We have a couple dessert wines. We make traditional dry-style white and red table wines as well, and everything in between. Because, again, we want those people to find something they like and that we want them to come back again.
Have you been growing as long as you've been making wine, or did the vineyard come later?
The vineyard was planted before the winery was open. Yeah, the vineyard at Willits probably goes back to about 2002, 2003, and then the winery opened its doors in 2005.
Okay, that's in Manitou, or is that outside Manitou?
Well, both is the honest answer. The vineyard is about 5 miles from Manitou, near a town called Spring Lake, Illinois.
Okay.
And the winery itself is in downtown Manitou. It's in the heart of downtown.
Okay. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus. Our guests are two Illinois winemakers here to talk about the growth of the Illinois wine industry. Tony Jacobson is the head winemaker at Sleepy Creek Vineyards in Vermilion County. Bradley Bean is with Willits Winery in Manitou, and he is an enologist with the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association. Their website, by the way, is illinoiswine.com. Our phone number is 333-9455. You can call toll-free at 1-800-222-9455, or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And Bradley, I was wondering, I understand the wine industry has really grown in the state in the past decade. What started the growth, and why was it so small before?
Early on in probably the the 80s, 90s, we had some wineries that were growing and developing their products, but it really wasn't considered by the general public to be a real viable career choice, you know. And I think what happened is we started to see more and more wineries make a go of it, and then it was something that was visible, and people that already had that bug but didn't really think they should probably try it out realized that, you know, this is actually a viable alternative to traditional agriculture, whatever their current job was. And so they saw the success other wineries were having and kind of jumped on board. And yeah, we've grown, in terms of the number of wineries, threefold since 2002. I think we had about 30 wineries in 2002, and now we're up to over 100. So it's grown really, really, really rapidly. Now, with that brings a number of challenges that I face, and that is to, you know, as you kind of mentioned, Tony's background, for example, is not in horticulture, viticulture, or winemaking, and that's very typical for the people that get involved in the wine industry or the grape growing industry. And so our job is to try to help shorten that learning curve, get them from struggling to making something of acceptable quality as quickly as possible. And that's kind of where we're at in the industry right now, is really, well, that's where we were about 3 years ago. Now we're starting to see the industry really take off. And I run the state wine competition, which was this week, and it's amazing the strides that I've seen this industry make since I've been, you know, here in 2005.
I want to get back to the wine competition in a moment. Let's take a phone call now. And line one, we have Dave in Champaign. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Yeah. We have a very common grape that's adapted to the region. And I wonder if that's being used as a genetic model, or if it's adapted to the area, it's probably adapted to different soils, as some grapes are adapted to soils. Is there any thought about using the native plant that is adapted to the region?
Yeah. In fact, Tony was referencing the cold climate cultivars that were coming down the line. We have some great breeding programs in the country, mainly Cornell University in upstate New York and the University of Minnesota, who have been developing really tremendously good quality wine grapes for cold climates. And largely what they're using, they're doing traditional breeding. Basically, they're hand-pollinating flowers.
But that's right? Out of town. What about the native grape that grows in the prairie right here and now for centuries?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, a lot of those also grow that far up north, too. I don't know which grape you're talking about specifically, but my point was that those kind of native varieties are largely what they're using to help improve the qualities of the grapes. So they'll cross something like a native grape found right here with, let's say, Chardonnay or Cabernet Sauvignon, and then they'll plant those seeds out and evaluate them for both cold hardiness, disease resistance, and wine quality.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Dave. It makes me wonder, Tony, what are you using, what are you growing at Sleepy Creek?
We have several different varieties at Sleepy Creek. We're growing some relatively unknown ones even across the state, but as well as some very commonly grown ones. So we have Leon Mio, Martial Foch grapes, Frontenac. We have a whole bunch of that. We have a little bit of Roujean. We just actually tore out an acre of Marquette that wasn't doing very well for us and replanted it with another grape called Noiré, which we've tasted a few wines for and made a couple ourselves and are really excited about that. And we have two more, Vignole and Le Crescent, which we love both of those.
Okay. Let's go to another phone call from Belgium, Illinois, on line 4. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes. Good morning to you all. I have a question that I was going to use a nasty word for you folks. You know, I don't care much for wine, but my wife does. It seems like all my friends do. And when I go to Sleepy Creek, or I've been to Sonoma and Napa and Russian River area, all kinds, northern upstate New York, all kinds of places where there are wines. But when I go to a winery, I'd love to have a beer. Everybody else is drinking wine. They enjoy it. I don't mind if they enjoy it. But why don't wineries have either a microbrewery associated with them, or maybe just sell microbrewery beer that they buy someplace else to help us folks that just don't have the taste? You know what I mean?
That's actually a really awesome point. So that's one of our favorite things to do at Sleepy Creek is we try and make it fun for everybody. So we are offering microbrew beers, and we're hoping to kind of increase our local footprint on some. But, you know, there's not a huge distribution out into our neck of the woods with some of the craft beers that are brewing up in Chicago. But there are some locals that are starting to pick up. But also, there are a couple of breweries that are attached with wineries down south, so things are starting to change in that direction. Nice thing about Illinois wine as a whole is we're not too snobby.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Brad, I'm wondering, of course, with the wine growers and vintners, you would be interested in wine production first, but do you see a lot of wine shops and wineries also including beer around the state?
Yes. Most of them, I shouldn't say all of them, but a lot of them do certainly have beer available, or they'll have their own specialty products of some kind. Like they'll take some of their wines and make some kind of interesting cocktail or sangria or something that's, you know, a little more friendly to those people that aren't really into wine. So they, again, the goal of most wineries is to give everybody that walks through the door something that they like. Now, on an industry-wide basis, the Grape Growers Association, the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association, has been really extending a hand to the Craft Brewers Association, which is really taking off in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. We see more and more of these little breweries popping up. And, you know, because their issues are the same issues we have legislatively, and so we're trying to reach out and help them and give them an organization that they can help, you know, hopefully see what we've done and learn from it.
I want to get back to the wine competition, and I understood this. Was this competition in connection with the upcoming Illinois State Fair?
Right. It's the official Illinois State Fair wine competition. Now, we have it earlier in the season and not on the fairgrounds because August at the fairgrounds is not the best sensory experience for wine evaluators. So we do it early, and we get all the results, and I'm actually in the middle of creating the official results packet, which will go up on IllinoisWine.com in the next day or two.
And what did you find out as far as what's out there in the competition?
Well, we have basically wineries will enter their wines in a number of classes. I think we have about 70 or 80 different classes, everything from you know, bottle fermented sparkling wines to still dry white and red table wines, rosés, sparkling wines, and fruit wines, and also, you know, some other category wines like vegetable wines and things like that. And so our strength is our diversity, really. We have all kinds of wines being made, and really I think we had 240 entries into this year's competition, and probably close to 200 of them took some kind of medal away. And that's a really good sign for the industry. That means, you know, we evaluate wines in a very objective way, the systematic evaluation. And so if they're getting a medal, it means that there's at least a some measure of quality in that bottle. And that's really what we're going for. We're trying to show the people, the potential consumers, that we are making very high-quality wines across the state.
For people going to the Illinois State Fair in August, will there be some sort of display? Is there Will Illinois wines be featured somewhere in the fair?
Absolutely. We have a ballroom, which we have been very fortunate to be able to occupy for the last several years, and we'll have probably as many as 15 or 16 different Illinois wineries there pouring samples, and you can also buy wine to take home with you. At the Ag Awards Day luncheon, I'll be up on stage presenting the top awards from this year's competition to those winners.
Do any wineries get involved in the county fair level?
Gosh, that's a very good question.
I don't know. Will Sleepy Creek be out of the Vermilion County Fair this year?
That I don't know for sure. I know we were there last year.
What sort of response did you get?
The response last year was kind of minimal. We weren't getting a lot of traffic through our area, so to be perfectly honest with you. So if we went again, we were hoping to be in a higher traffic area.
Mm-hmm. I would guess part of the challenge is awareness is still growing as far as Illinois wine is concerned. And as I was talking with you before we went on the air, I bought a copy, the latest copy of Wine Enthusiast magazine. They review hundreds of wines in the back of the book. There is no category for Midwestern wines here, and that means not just Illinois, but all the wine-producing states in the middle of the country. Is that a challenge overall, just getting that awareness to happen for Midwestern wines, Brad?
I would say it is, but it's growing. We're starting to gain a certain level of respectability on a worldwide scale, and I think philosophically, where our industry is in a good spot. I think most of our wineries identify with the task or the struggle of actually trying to do something unique, trying to be something that nobody else is, not trying to make California wines exclusively or we don't want to necessarily have to compete on that level. So what we can do is take our time, work hard, learn about these new varieties, learn how to optimize the processing for these new grape varieties, and eventually establish our identity in the world as something that is truly unique to us.
I know when I reported on Illinois wines about a decade ago, I was looking at the state government's efforts to encourage wine production. What is the state of Illinois doing as far as wine production is concerned, and how does that help?
Yeah, they've continued to be fairly supportive, and mainly that support shows up in the means of, as funding for extension specialists like myself. And I was looking at the figures earlier this morning, and Illinois tax revenues from the wine industry are up around, I think it was around $33 million in 2012.
Really?
Yeah, 2011, 2012, and that's not just excise tax, but also sales tax. And their investment is well less than 1% of that. I think it's around $200,000, $250,000 or something like that. So for what they're giving us, they're getting a lot back. And we've had a good relationship with the Illinois Department of Agriculture and look forward to continuing that relationship as we move forward. I think they recognize that it is certainly in their own best interest to see this industry grow.
I have a question that came in on email from Jerry, which I guess points to perhaps a different side of the wine industry. Jerry writes, as a person in recovery, I no longer drink traditional wine. I know there are non-alcoholic beers and even very low-alcohol beers. Is there such a thing in the wine world? Other than the sparkling grape juices, I've always hoped I could find an acceptable alternative.
Yeah, you certainly can find de-alcoholized wines out there.
Is that being done in Illinois?
Not to my knowledge, but again, if we have 105 wineries, we probably have 1,000 or more wines. So there's a chance that somebody out there is doing it, and I'm just not aware of it. You can find those on grocery store shelves if you look around.
Not at Sleepy Creek, maybe.
No, not yet.
And I don't know what the technology is there. There's always going to be a difference, but can you get an acceptable product that, if you're just simply not able to drink wine, can you get some of the experience? Can you get some quality of flavor from a de-alcoholized wine?
Sure. I don't think it's the same product. When you take the alcohol out, that alcohol actually is more than just something that makes people feel goofy. It also contributes some sensory impact. You know, it actually creates the warm sensation. It helps balance the sweetness of the fruit or sweetness of the wine, too. So it has a value in the wine itself. It also acts as a powerful, you know, preservative, helps maintain a certain level of quality for a long period of time. The wineries that are pulling the alcohol out of wine are pretty big operations generally, and so they have the means and the equipment to actually keep that wine safe and secure for once it goes into a bottle. There are certain products out there, that will satisfy that need. However, I would suggest maybe just looking towards fruit and vegetable juices and things like that, which are very healthy and good for you. You can still get a lot of the antioxidant benefits from any variety of fruit and vegetables. So you can still do that.
Well, we're going to take a short break now, and we'll be back with more on the Illinois wine industry and more on I think, just finding out how wine is made. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows. We're back on Focus. Our guests are two Illinois winemakers here to talk about the growth of the Illinois wine industry. Tony Jacobson is the head winemaker at Sleepy Creek Vineyards in Vermilion County. Bradley Beam is an enologist with the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association and winemakers at Willits Winery at Manitou. And you can call us with your questions and comments about Illinois wine. Our phone number here is 333-9455. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455, and you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Tony, I just wanted to go over to you to ask about just, we've been talking about the growing of grapes. We haven't talked that much about the winemaking process. How does that work? And, what do you do? You have the grapes. How do you go from grapes to wine?
So this is actually one of my favorite parts about it because it's such an interesting process. And there's all sorts of, like as a little kid, I loved watching the different equipments going, construction sites or wherever I was. And so this is one of my favorite things. And so basically it's a relatively straightforward process through wineries all around the world. But there are variations on the theme for it, different steps here and there. But basically, every winery gets their grapes, and they'll do an inspection and see what they want or see how they look and everything. But then if it's a white grape, it gets pressed immediately. So a lot of wineries will take the skins off and crush it, and then they'll put it into a giant press, and they'll basically separate the juice from the skins and the seeds. And then they'll pitch a yeast, which is typically a purchase yeast that will impart different characteristics into the wine that a winemaker might find or has a goal to achieve. For a red wine, the process is a little bit different there. Generally, what will happen is a winemaker will get their grapes and then they'll crush it immediately, or sometimes they'll leave it uncrushed. But anyway, they separate the grapes from the stems, and then what they'll do is they'll pitch their yeast and they'll ferment it with the stems, with the seeds and the skins, I'm sorry. And so that maceration time with the skins and the seeds is actually what produces the red color in a red wine. So there's that hybrid in the middle ground where they'll choose a red grape, and some wineries will actually press that really quick, for example, white Zinfandel. And it's actually, a lot of people have heard of the Zinfandel grape. A white Zinfandel wine is just a pressed, not fermented with the skins, or fermented for a short period of time.
So the entire process takes how long?
And that ranges. So the first part that I just described ranges from anywhere from just a few days to up to a few weeks. And then there's the aging process, which can take quite a bit longer.
And how long, we always hear about, good years for wine. How long do you wait until you know that it's been a good year?
That's entirely dependent on the wine. So, and basically the good year on a wine goes, like Brad said, is a good year for growing grapes.
What's a good year at Sleepy Creek?
Actually, last year was a really great year for us because of the drought, which is actually kind of a kind of goes back and forth. Different agricultural things have different affections on that. But what it did was, since we didn't get a lot of rain, it actually concentrated our water content and our flavors. So we actually ended up with some really good quality grapes and juice and thus wine from it.
Well, the wine that's coming out now, and Bradley, maybe the wine that was being judged this year, is that wine from the 2012 grape crop?
Some of it. A lot of the whites and the rosés were harvested last year. Often the reds, they'll actually spend a little more time going through the aging process, whether it's in a barrel or just in a bulk tank or in the bottle before they will actually release it for sale. So vintages really range from 2012 all the way back to, you know, early 2000s, 2001, 2002.
So that's about the age of wines that you would see right now. I mean, you wouldn't expect to see, even if the production was there, a wine from the 1940s, for example.
I would hope not. Yeah. Chances are pretty good if you get a wine from the 1940s, it's not going to be worth a second sip.
But how many years back can you depend on a bottle of wine?
It's so hard to say. It's very... it varies dramatically from wine to wine and from vintage to vintage. Now, the old style of winemaking, when you go back to the old world, France, Italy, Spain, their reds tended to age a very, very long time, you know, and they would actually make them so that they wouldn't be ready for sale for a decade or more after harvest. Because, and that's a product of the tannins, the harsh, astringent character that's in the skin of the grape. Anymore, most reds... that you'll buy, you know, in the $10 to $20 price range, whether it's from Illinois or from California, really. Most of them are made and designed to be ready to drink that day, the day that you buy it in the store. And the ageability may or may not be that long. Generally speaking, though, with reds, you can age them for a much longer period than whites. Most white wines and fruit wines and rosés are as good as they're going to be, you know, as soon after harvest as possible.
Tony, I'm wondering, this process, which seems to involve a lot of waiting, does that mean that you can walk away and do something else, or does the wine and the equipment need a lot of tending during all that process?
There's a lot of tending that goes on. We monitor the wines throughout fermentation. We want to make sure that the fermentation generally goes as healthily as possible. Yeast can be little needy bacterias, and so we want to tend to them and make sure that they're happy. But as well as the equipment as well, you can't just, there are some that are more advanced than what we've got at Sleepy Creek, but our stuff, we actually have to be there watching, making sure nothing crazy happens.
What sort of outlay would you expect for the equipment for wine production? What do you have to pay to have a professional operation up and ready to run?
That's actually not a question that I can answer entirely honestly, because I wasn't part of the purchasing process.
Bradley, maybe you know more about this.
The first question that comes to mind is, how much do you have? Because really the answer is, it depends on the size of the winery. You know, I actually, years ago, there was a winery startup guide that was created by the Illinois Grape Growers Association, and I updated it a few years ago to match the prices of modern-day equipment and things. But it's there's a huge upfront investment in starting a winery, and that's one of the challenges for our industry. It's also a huge upfront investment for vineyards, too. But winery equipment, you know, crushers and destemmers and presses, you know, a standard press, like you would find at most wineries, is in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. And that's just one piece of equipment you only use one time of the year. You know, we use a lot of stainless steel tanks, which are certainly expensive. Depending on size, the price goes up to, you know, $5,000 to $15,000 to $20,000, depending on how big the tank is. So you got pumps, you know, that cost a couple thousand dollars. So it kind of adds up pretty darn quickly. And then you have a whole host of yeast strains and, you know, chemicals used for analysis of the wine, and also additives and things like that that people use to help keep their wine safe. So the cost is pretty extreme.
Okay. Let me take another call now. And line one, Carol in Urbana, you're on the air on Focus. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much. I'm interested in, alcohol being a consumer choice that it doesn't have a heavy environmental toll to it, and the localness of the grapes I would see as helping. I wondered if you had thought of taking advantage of, you know, selling to people like me by using your with your association, thinking about having a standard bottle and looking into, you know, some sorts of adhesives for labels that might come off easily, so that you could return route for all your bottles.
So essentially, a returnable bottle. Now, I'm sure a lot of glass bottles are recycled these days, but you're suggesting actually having them returned and reused for future wine production.
Yes, I spoke to a distributor once, and he, you know, I was obviously not thinking it through well, because the bottles that he was carrying were coming from all over the world or all over the country, and different sizes and stuff. But you have an association, so if you could exploit that to market to a person like me, you know, for example.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brad, I don't know, is that a market niche there?
Potentially, you know, I think of that idea. I mean, I think it's a good one in theory, and I think most wineries, if not all of them, are trying to be as environmentally conscious as they possibly can be. However, most wineries in Illinois are also run on a shoestring budget with a minimum labor. So usually the two owners are not just the owners, but they're also the winemaker and the grape grower. And so what you really get into is more of a labor issue with a returnable bottle, a reusable bottle, because, you know, everything would have to be cleaned and sanitized very thoroughly before we could reuse it.
I'm wondering, and maybe that's a question for Tony, the process of just the bottles you use now, making sure they're clean and sterilized. How does that work?
So it kind of varies across the board as far as what wineries will do for bottle sterilization. So some wineries will actually wash individual bottles and then sterilize, and they'll actually, before the bottling process, blast the bottle with an inert gas so that the wine is completely free of oxygen. And other wineries, basically the bottles come in clean straight off of the out of the factory from delivery. So some wineries that can't afford the time or the effort to do that while they're trying to fill 1,000 bottles at a time, we'll skip that process entirely.
Well, Carol, I want to thank you very much for calling. That does lead us to the marketing of wine, and that's a question I wonder. Are we seeing Illinois wine sold outside of Illinois, outside of the Midwest? Is it traveling much?
It is traveling a little bit, mainly on the fringes of the state. You know, if we have wineries that are near a state border, we certainly see them reach across the state border into other states. Every state has its own specific liquor laws as it pertains to distribution, and so sometimes that's a problem for some wineries. But some of our larger wineries certainly do move their products around to other states, mostly in the Midwest. We don't see too many making it out to the West Coast or the East Coast right now.
At the place where you make wine, Brad, Willett's, do they sell much outside of their own shop?
A little bit. Mainly, the problem, you know, these wineries that are very small, we like to sell as much off of our own property as possible, because when we start to sell to a secondary retail outlet or a restaurant, the price drops. You know, so we sell them at wholesale prices instead of retail prices. And most of our small wineries don't have, you know, a distributor, so it's also an added workload for them to actually just physically move wine from point A to point B. So we try to move most of it directly through our shop, but we do have strategic locations around the Midwest because we have customers who are demanding it, customers that are saying, we really want your wine in Bloomington, or we really want your wine in Peoria. And so so we will have our several different types of our wine available, but not everything.
Tony, is same situation with you, or do you have a distributor lined up?
That's the same exact situation with us. We actually have only one retail outlet, and we anytime we're running errands over in Champaign, it's the Common Ground Food Co-op will drop off a case whenever they need it.
Okay. And so you're not, like, getting into the big liquor stores or that sort of thing at this point?
We haven't reached into the liquor stores yet.
Brad, are there any wineries in Illinois which produce at that volume that are getting into the more standard retail outlets?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have several wineries that are distributing pretty widely and having a lot of success doing it. In fact, just to go back to the competition real quickly, we actually, this is the first year we've ever actually done a packaging competition attached to the wine competition. And the reason for that, the catalyst, was we see more wineries starting to grow. And once they start to grow, they're looking for new avenues to retail their products. And so they're looking to distribute a little bit more. And so it's more important than ever that these wineries have an effective package, you know, an effective label, a really attractive label, something that will sell your product when you are not physically there to sell it to a customer. And that's an area, actually, that Sleepy Creek Vineyards has been really successful at. In fact, they entered our competition this year, the packaging competition, and took a top award, got the best of category for their Winey Mary label.
Winey Mary.
For the whimsical category.
Tell me about this, Tony.
So this is our tomato jalapeno wine. We're really excited about it. We actually kind of, the process of it took a sidestep with this one. Our equipment can't handle crushing tomatoes because they're a lot bigger than grapes. So we actually had to sanitize some boots and stomp our tomatoes down. But the wine itself is fantastic. It's got a nice tomato flavor, a hint of jalapeno. It's got like a mild salsa kind of heat to it. So it's just some people like it and love it by itself because it's so unique and different. But other people actually will mix it about half and half with a Bloody Mary mix that we get out of Springfield. And it's also that lightens up like a Bloody Mary. And so basically my favorite part about it is like drinking a Bloody Mary without having a whole meal in your stomach.
And how are you packaging this product?
We worked with a local artist, Robert Chapman, who made us a custom-designed piece of artwork, and then I basically laid out the rest of the label, and we came up with a good story about talking about how to enjoy the Winey Mary and try to nail down the design of it.
Well,
it is an amazing package, and we'll have a picture of the label up on the official results when those get posted to IllinoisWine.com. And sorry, Tony, I was going to call you, but I thought this would be a better way to break the news.
I got a big smile on my face.
Good.
Congratulations, Tony. This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and there's still time for your questions and comments about Illinois wine. Give us a call at 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. An email that just came in is a question about sweet wines. I love sweet wines, our writer writes, and have enjoyed some from Missouri. Three-part question. Are there any good sweet wines produced in Illinois?
There are tons of good sweet wines produced in Illinois. The Midwest as a whole has a sweet palate from all the way from Indiana to Missouri up to Minnesota and Wisconsin. So you can find sweet wines locally all over that are delicious.
Part two, the writer loves Moscato, a sweet wine. Are there any Illinois Moscatos?
That's a better question for Brad.
Yes, there certainly are. In fact, we're seen different types of muscat. Muscat's a general category for a type of grape, but we have several different types of muscats that are surviving and doing very well in southern Illinois. Tony, you referenced the Midwest palate. Well, really, it's a national thing. I mean, that Moscato is the number one fastest growing wine style in the world right now. You know, we see a lot of Moscato being planted and grown and marketed out of California these days. So the sweet palate isn't just a Midwest thing anymore. California finally caught on to it, too.
And what makes a Moscato as opposed to a generic sweet wine?
It's the grape variety. There are a whole host of Muscat Canelli. There's Golden Muscats. There are all kinds of different Muscat grape varieties out there. They have a real distinctive sweet floral aroma to them.
Okay. I wanted to get back to a question about the growing. I think we've talked about the climate issues in growing wine in Illinois, but I don't know if we had talked about, well, the herbicide issues. This is, I guess this is a state where they grow a lot of corn and soybeans, which are essentially at war with weeds that look like grapes to them. Is that how it works, Tony?
That's basically it. One of the biggest issues is actually we have issues with 2,4-D, and it's a pesticide or herbicide that, when applied in the right conditions, can actually revolatilize and drift. And since it basically goes after broadleaf plants, which are grapes, it'll land on those, and since it's a growth inhibitor, it can actually stop the growth of a plant varietal. And depending on how bad the drift is and the concentration, it can actually kill an entire vine.
And so that's got to be a challenge for people growing wines, especially there must be some corn and soybeans being grown not too far away from Sleepy Creek.
Yeah, we actually have corn that's planted, and we don't even have a road in between it with one of our neighbors. But we also have corn on another side that we've got just a simple, you know, two-lane highway in between us and them.
Brad, how are wine growers dealing with this problem around the state?
Well, especially as you hit the northern two-thirds of the state, once you get down to the Shawnee Hills where there's less corn and beans, they have less of a problem with it. But you would be hard-pressed to find any vineyard in the northern two-thirds of the state that hasn't seen some sign of 2,4-D damage, drift damage. Now, the state legislature actually did us a huge favor a couple years ago, and they started implementing this driftwatch.org website where we could actually post our vineyard locations in a Google Maps program so that commercial sprayers are aware that we're here. And commercial sprayers are also posting, you know, they're actually signing on to the program too, so they can let us know where they are and they know where we are. So hopefully they can be more observant of our needs. I mean, they're very much aware now that we have a strong 2,4-D sensitivity specifically. There are other pesticides or herbicides that are problems too, but that's the main one. And so it's not fixed yet, but we're working on it. You know, we're trying to help these people. And at least if they do encounter some drift, it might help give them some kind of recourse, some kind of action they can take to say, hey, you know, this is an irresponsible choice that some of these commercial sprayers are making especially. So hopefully over the years we'll get more people aware of that. Growing grapes is really tough in Illinois, and you mentioned the climate issues. We've got all kinds of disease pressure in Illinois. It's a constant fight, and this is just one more thing that we have to try to battle against. And you know, the strength of our viticulture, the strength of our grape growing in the state is critical to the success of our industry. We need to really be able to encourage more people to get into grape growing, more people to take that initial risk and that initial investment hit to start a long-term project. And when people look out at the reality of what we're up against right now, they might be a little less hesitant or a little more hesitant to do that. So if we can get those issues cleared up and taken care of and get people focused on just the, you know, the natural issues that we already have, that'll be a huge step forward for our industry.
Well, maybe this is a question for anybody who's interested in getting into either growing grapes for wine or wine making, whether they come out of agriculture or graphic design like Tony. How do you get started? Where's a good place to find the information you need to be able to make decisions about this?
Yeah, well, the first place to really look, if you're a hobbyist even, or if you're thinking about becoming a hobbyist, is the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association. It's a really strong organization. We do a lot for the industry. We put on, I myself put on a lot of workshops on basic winemaking techniques, and in fact I've got a series coming up this summer that'll address pre-harvest conditions and things you need to do to take care of your equipment and things like that. And whether you are a commercial winemaker or somebody that's thinking about getting into it, if you join the Illinois Grape Growers Association, it's a good way to get discounts on those kind of workshops. And also it gives you a chance to fellowship with other growers, other winemakers, people that are in your same situation. And truthfully, you know, the winemakers and the grape growers learn as much from each other as they do from somebody like me. So any opportunity we can use to get them together is always a good thing.
And finally, I was reminded that a lot of wineries, since I think Sleepy Creek is no exception, besides just producing and selling wine, you're also creating events for people to go to at your wineries.
Absolutely. That's one of our biggest things. We want to create a good experience for people, and it stems from the wine, but basically we're a hub for, we want to ultimately be a hub for local activities. So we work with different local vendors and sell some of their wares. We have local artists that showcase their cool, like we have a great quilt show going on at our gallery right now, and we also have concerts about once every month. So, but not to mention we have wine tastings every day, and we really encourage a nice open atmosphere regarding wine. So if you're new to wine, or you haven't really tasted, or it seems like kind of a subject that you're having trouble getting into, we'll gladly teach you just even some of the basics on tasting a wine, how to kind of enjoy the most of it without, you know, being snobby and shunning you away.
Brad, is this something a lot of wineries do around the state, and can people find out about it through your organization's website?
Absolutely. We have a calendar on the website. Most wineries do events, special events, and weekend music and things like that. Willits and Sleepy Creek, I think, both do a great job of that. And if you go to their individual websites, you'll have a better shot at seeing the scope of the kind of events that they both do. The other thing that the Grape Growers Association sponsors are wine festivals around the state. And if you're somebody who has never been to a winery or is, you know, just kind of dipping your toe in for the first time, a festival is also a good opportunity to go and kind of see, you know, you can go to one festival and see 30 wineries. And so you can see kind of the scope of what we really have to offer as an industry and find out what you like. And even more importantly, sometimes find out what you don't like, you know, which will help kind of narrow your purchasing choices in the future, so you don't have that same amount of risk associated with going into a shop and buying a bottle of wine. But we're all in the entertainment business. We're also all in the education business. You know, we realize that all of our grape varieties and our wine styles are new to most of the people that walk through our door, and so we love that challenge. You know, we want to be your first wine tasting experience because I think we can make you happy.
Well, I invite everybody to come to our website, will.illinois.edu/focus, and you'll find a link to a list of Illinois wineries at illinoiswine.com, as well as a link to Sleepy Creek Vineyards. And Tony Jacobson of Sleepy Creek and Bradley Bean of the Illinois Grape Growers and Vintners Association, thank you very much for being on Focus today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. See you later, Tony.
See you,
I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus.